Welcome to
Wait.
another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and honored to welcome a very, very senior entrepreneur, businessman from the US, a fellow YPO member, Mr. Kevin Fallon. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ash, and very happy to be here and excited for our discussion.
Thank you. Kevin is the founder and CEO of Pivotal Innovation. And as I just mentioned, he's a fellow member of the YPO. So Kevin, before we get into Pivotal information, tell me a little bit about your own journey.
Well, I'll give you a short version, but yep. I was born in New York City in the Bronx, believe it or not, of Irish descent. And at 7 years old, my dad took the whole family back to Western rural Ireland. So that change, I would say, impacted kind of my views and perspective on life. And then we came back to Philadelphia once I graduated from high school and spent a year on the farm. So anyway, in my early days, I took engineering at Drexel University in Philadelphia, and it's actually impacted the way I approach things ever since. Engineering, I think, is a fantastic discipline. But so the first company I started was to automate factories for Fortune 1000s. And we did that for 17 years. We implemented thousands of projects for household names in the U.S. Then I got involved in lean manufacturing and lean software, both services and the software for supply chain management and manufacturing. So that's kind of a thread throughout my career. And we live in Denver, Colorado, and moved from Philadelphia back in 97 as part of the sale of the automation company I built back there in Philadelphia.
Wonderful. So let's now talk about Pivotal Innovation. Tell me about this venture and what was your motivation to start it?
Yeah, so for Pivotal, what we do is help organizations accelerate value growth for lower cost. That's it. You know, a consultant can say we help companies increase the value of their businesses, but not for lower cost. So there's a combination of things that Pivotal has. One, at the core is an automation system. You would never imagine running your accounting or your finance today with an abacus or your sales without a CRM system.
Correct.
But most companies run the growth, the transformation of their business with no platform whatsoever. It's ad hoc. So there's no wonder that companies don't grow in a systemic and systematic way. But what led to this, I had some background from RCA Space. I think we share some common stuff now part of Lockheed, fast forward 100 years. But a few years ago, everybody was talking about innovation, but nobody was talking about accounting. So usually that means people aren't sure of things when they're talking about it. I did a bunch of research and I found out that one of the fundamental flaws in for better innovation happened, or I'd like to call that the same as transformation. But it means different things to different people. But the what I discovered was that the underlying architecture, if you will, or the way people think about the business itself was very weak and flawed. So we created a systems model for the business, like a better framework for people to understand business. And what's interesting is because business is a system, right? So if we can define this underlying system, perhaps we can make it grow faster in a systemic and systematic way. And what we then discovered was that innovation is part of a triad of disciplines, namely strategy, the execution of the strategy, and the innovation. And what we did was integrated and automated those disciplines, which we call the disciplines of growth. And actually, that's a system that rides on top of the underlying business system. Right. So what's interesting is you don't have to think about the growth of your company in an ad hoc way as much as a systematic and systemic way to drive growth.
And Kevin, how do you define value creation?
Wow, that's a pretty interesting question, because as you know, value creation means different things to different people, right?
Correct.
And probably that's what predicated the question.
Yeah.
And I think about it, it's kind of like innovation. Never, ever get into a conversation with anybody on innovation or yes. even value creation, unless you both come to a common definition Correct. Of what it is.
Mm.
So we have a little model, and again, it comes from some of the systems background. We call it the four C's, mm-hmm. right? And there's actually five of them, but we mm-hmm. call it the four C's.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is it's create value, communicate value, convey value, and capture value back into the company.
Yeah.
So the value creation that you asked me about is one of those four C's.
Yeah.
And that represents a flow model for mm-hmm. the current state of the business.
Yeah.
And what the challenge is how do we transform those four C's? We call that the fifth C, and that is changing the whole underlying. Or what are the constraints in each of your flow models, mm-hmm. and are we attacking those constraints? Because mm-hmm. that's how you grow value fastest for lower cost.
Mm-hmm.
But so within that framework, value creation then, we would look at as the development of new products, services, business models, partnerships, M&A. It's money I'm investing today that's going to pay off in tomorrow's income statements, right, type of scenario, as opposed to your create, communicate, and convey. Excuse me, the communicate and convey. Mm. So the communicating value, it doesn't matter what kind of company you have. It's your sales and marketing fundamentally. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it from the customer point backwards, mm-hmm. what you can do is measure it. And the other thing is when I'm conveying value, it's really the customer fulfillment cycle. Mm-hmm. And it can go all the way back through to your suppliers. Or if you're in a bank, it can be just the service delivery to that okay. customer.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is you can actually define the quantity, quality, and cost
mm-hmm.
at that customer point of view. So then why wouldn't we hold marketing and sales together for that outcome and let the leaders, if you have separate leaders in those areas, a lot of people are using revenue officers and chief revenue officers and what have you. But if you have that separated, organizationally speaking, it doesn't mean you have to have it separated on a flow model.
Mm.
So your key performance indicators, you can actually align along those lines. Now you can break them down, but anyway, that's the kind of value creation.
And I'm going to ask you a very basic question for a lot of my young viewers and listeners. What is the difference between valuation and value creation?
So, okay. Well, valuation is the worth of a business at any point in time, right? And it's the willingness of two parties to exchange money for the business type
Correct.
Of a scenario.
Mm.
I can liken that almost to a balance sheet concept. Mm. I'm taking a snapshot in time.
Mm.
We can measure valuation along the lines of EBITDA multiples, revenue multiples, whatever it may be.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, the value of a company is somewhere between zero and lots of multiples on mm-hmm. your 20 times revenue, right?
Correct.
For these super sexy SaaS models that are going out there. On the other hand, the value creation is what I'm doing in my business,
mm-hmm.
and the part that we just defined was new product development. And in a startup, that's really all I'm working on, right?
Mm.
On that element. So a lot of the other functions of the company have not even come into existence yet.
Mm.
So the ability to build value. So if I think about that for a moment from a financial perspective, it's almost like I'm building a better income statement of the future, right? Because I'm building the capability to actually deliver value to customers in my value creation component of the company. So you could, if you want to look at them from the financial perspective, one could be equated to, obviously equivalency, and then one could be, I'm improving what my income statement is going to look like in the future because I'm developing a new service or product.
Very interesting. And you just spoke a little bit about startups. So my next question is for startup entrepreneurs and the medium and small enterprises. What are some of their challenges to build for value creation? Because my perspective is that value creation leads to valuation. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. Value creation will lead to valuation for sure. But and I would like to add one little thing. When you look at financial statements, they should be they should be treated as fine perfume, right? Mm-hmm. To be sniffed but not consumed.
Well said. Well
because the internal executives, depending on their level of you know, what would I say? How they view their world.
Yeah.
From an outside view, bad executives can do bad things with financial statements, and the external public won't know about it. So yeah, there's a problem there.
So when you know, a startup or a small organization reaches out to Pivotal, what do you do to support them?
Right. So when we work with companies, there are several things. Number one, at the heart of our work is the automation platform, right? That is at the heart, because we can help people take a lot of misery and you know, ad hoc discombobulated thinking out of their world, because right. we take a flow model. At the kind of the base level, we add onto our platform a co-piloting service for the CEO. And this is like a light service to ensure that the CEO is focused on the highest priorities relative to what they're trying to accomplish. Now, let's assume it's a more established company, like a medium-sized company. And we didn't drill into the details of that. I got off target a little bit there. But if we look then below the CEO at the function layer, what you'll find a lot of times is the function leaders are working on the current operations and not actually prioritizing what needs to be improved in the company. So we have a what we call an objective performance component. And that's, you know, something we do. And we include education and mastermind sessions in that particular piece.
Right.
But ultimately speaking, if you get your strategy right, you can translate it through the function layer. A lot of people talk about the strategy execution gap. We solve that gap as fundamental to what we do. But at the end of the day, if you get all that right, I can promise you what happens is the constraint in every company that I've faced is execution. And we also have a mastermind session to help folks with the execution. And what's interesting, a lot of the business coaches, and I've talked to a lot of them, they help the CEO and the function team as this team, but the actual problem in every company is below the function layer.
Right.
And it's when I ask, what do you do about that? Because when you fan out the value to cost, it diminishes. The cost goes up and the value. So the sweet spot for the coaches is that we've solved that problem with these mastermind sessions of how do I help that execution layer, the team leaders fundamentally, without costing them a lot of money.
Interesting. You just spoke about your mastermind sessions. Is this something similar to when I was reading about you, where you have your Grow the Value of Your Business Faster roundtable?
Yes, that's the mastermind sessions are totally different from that. But during COVID, we did offer a virtual workshop. And remember, I mentioned the disciplines of growth being strategy, execution, and innovation. And we've integrated and automated them so that companies could have a more focused view of drive and change. That workshop was actually put together to solve that issue. So we take, in a very rapid way, we take a group of leaders through viewing their strategy, execution, innovation. So we have a little education component, right? And then a little workshop, you know, workshop light, if you will. And we just run them through that. And then what do you want to prioritize to drive better strategy out there? That's what that workshop was about.
Interesting. My next question to you, and I've asked this from many, many senior business leaders like yourself, because there seems to be a lot of confusion in people's minds. Who knows how to price companies better? Stock markets or VCs?
Well, excuse me. Well, first of all, we're talking about apples and oranges, right? Okay. Because usually the companies within the public sector, right, your stock market, would be more mature companies.
Correct.
Okay, and then the VCs are more early stage. But with that said, you know, all companies do have a value, as I said earlier, it could be zero to multiple, high multiples on revenue. No matter what the company, right? If I go read the business books, right? It's the present value of future cash flows. Is, you know, this is what the business schools will tell you.
Yeah.
I'd like to insert anticipated cash flows there, because my real question to your question is, is it easier to predict the future or to value a company?
Absolutely.
All right. It's one of the same, right?
Yeah.
So with all that said, stock markets, though, definitely have a better ability to price companies.
I agree with you.
But I would like to mention one thing, and that is, and it's my old company that I, early stage, I worked for GE, right in the transition from Reg Jones to Jack Welch. There's a guy named David Gelles just wrote this book, The Man Who Broke Capitalism.
Okay.
And it was published earlier this year. It is a scathing report on Jack, the destruction that Jack Welch did in GE by through financial engineering, right? Non-value creation.
Correct.
And it's pretty sad, because it was kind of one of my early, where I cut my teeth in my early career. And so yes, stock markets absolutely have a better way to. Now the VC side, and I've dealt with bootstrap startups, venture-backed startups, and I've been in the public markets and private markets. The interesting thing with the VCs, they're all tell you the great story. And they're always talking about the front 50% of their fund, but you never hear anything about the back end of the fund.
So you're right.
A few years ago, CalPERS, which is the California public employee retirement thing. So they have got, you know, billions and billions to invest. And part of their portfolio is to invest in venture companies through the VCs. They force the VCs to actually tell them end of fund return on investments. And a ton of the VCs, I'm talking Silicon Valley best, they opted out because they didn't want to display the dark underbelly of the VC world out there, and the boneyard of failed businesses.
Correct.
So anyway, the answer to that is, in the super early stage, the angel world, VCs have no interest in valuing the company. If I may tell you my attitude on this, they're running, it's industrialized in the US now. Every city has an angel group. And the attempt to actually compress the value, because they're running puppy mills, right? And it's now a feeder system into the bigger world.
Yeah.
And it's really a shame in one sense, but I can't blame them, because it's like finding needles in haystacks. That's trying to find good ventures.
Well said. And yet, you know, Kevin, when I was speaking to several of our YPO colleagues, you know, in different parts of the world, who are old traditional businesses, they wonder, they said, you know, we've built businesses over 100 years, created huge amounts of assets, built profitable companies, and along comes a startup, gets listed, and is worth many, many billions, you know, decacorns or whatever it's called. How does one reconcile asset heavy companies with, as you mentioned, future earnings?
Well, probably in the startups, it's better not to have any profits, because you sell the dream or fake it till you make it stuff, right? This is all you hear until, you know, Elizabeth Holmes gets her in prison for breaking the boundaries of truth.
Correct.
So startups. And like you're talking about, you know, some of those startups, obviously, take Tesla, not to really go there, but, you know, that's a heavy asset-based company. Take Amazon, even crazier, you know, the assets. in the entire infrastructure of Amazon. Mm. But I think, well, there's a couple of different, there's never any one answer to any of this stuff. But when you really think about those type of companies, they're very visionary leaders mm. in those companies relative to your Ford Motor companies or your GMs type of thing. But I would like to kind of separate not as much as the asset base versus mm. The new startups mm. versus the more traditional. Uh-huh. And a lot of times those more traditionals, they've gotten so ingrained in operating the business as mm. opposed to transforming it. You know, if I have a blank slate, I can't think about any operations whatsoever. I got to think about what am I going to create here? Mm. And now I can dream and create bigger mm. things. So, you know, I would say a lot of times the in the front end, and you can fool some of the people some of the time when you have these outrageous stories, but they're not backed up with any, you know, look at the bubble burst in 2000 and then the yeah. housing burst in 2008. Yeah. Mm. Those happen, but I think some of those dreams, obviously the SaaS models, and they're totally different because mm. the cost of acquisition of the revenue line is massive. Mm. But if you have no churn, my gosh, that thing is a cash cow for into perpetuity type of thing. Perfect. And that's what they're betting on those. So mm. they'll pour more money than you can imagine into those mm. companies.
You know, why I asked you this question, Kevin, is I was watching this movie on the series on Apple TV on WeWork or WeCrashed. And it's an interesting set of episodes where it shows that there was no assets, but it was valued at some incredible $45 or $50 billion. And startup, as you say, fake it till you make it kind of thing. And then this destroyed huge shareholder value.
It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of these things, and you know, hey, humans are, you know, we all go back to the tulip bulb days in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. right? People get up. Well, that's one of my, you know, I would say to young entrepreneurs, don't follow these herds out there. Really think. So anyway, it's
very interesting. So I've got my last question to you now. This is for the many, many young people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your incredible journey and your vast reservoir of knowledge and wisdom, what would you say are three lessons you would want our viewers and listeners to take away?
Well, I think a few things. You know, one of the areas is, especially consultants, by the way, mm-hmm. really would love us to all believe we live in this VUCA world, right? Mm-hmm. You're familiar with this.
Yeah.
Volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world.
Yeah. Mm.
And we actually don't, mm. right? This is putting fear in, so we got to pay a lot of money into these mm. consultants, what have you. We don't. We're living in a world where change is accelerating. Mm. This is a great thing, right? Yeah. It's the opportunities abound. And yeah. I would say that the greatest opportunity lies ahead for yeah. society.
Yeah.
I only wish, I never cared about dying, but I do. I wish I were 30 years younger
yeah.
to participate in this incredible future
yeah.
that we have.
Yeah.
And then one other thing, if you're a business leader, don't yeah. look at the older model of peers.
Yeah.
If you're a CEO or a president.
Yeah.
And another piece of this is the business leader actually, as you don't own the challenges of the functions.
Mm.
What you own is the coaching of those function leaders yeah. to think in the gap between future state, current state. They have the so I can go out there tomorrow and ask a group of CEOs, and you know this too, Ash. Hey, what's your biggest problem? Yeah. Oh my gosh, we've got all these people leaving. Mm. We got the great resignation going on. And then yeah. you ask another CEO, my supply chain is totally messed up and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that's the HR leader's problem. And that's the supply chain or your operations leader's problem. What is your key problem as the leader of the company?
Yeah.
And it's truly to dream this incredible strategy, but wire it back all the way down to execution, not some lofty dream stuff. So that would be my second thing. And then every company's growth limitation, in my personal opinion, and one of our most famous transformation gurus of the time was Dr. Edwards Deming, right? Back there. And I really agree with a lot of the things he said in the past, but every company is governed by the knowledge to solve gap problems between my current state and future state that I dream up. And it's that ability to build a knowledge base around solving those gap problems, I would say. So just in summary, in that the world is just full of information. Worthless information.
Yeah.
Don't get caught up in the fads and everything. Drill very deeply in your own space.
Yeah. Very interesting. Kevin, on that note and your incredible lessons, you know, I love this comment about change is accelerating. The greatest opportunities lie ahead of us. And as they say, the best is yet to come. I think I'm in complete agreement with you. You also spoke about don't look at older models, think ahead. You said, you know, that the CEO should really be coaching leaders rather than owning up to their own problems. And organizations need to really look at the gap that is there in the knowledge and try and bridge this gap. Thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about Pivotal Innovation, all the amazing work that you are doing. Thank you for sharing with us some of your deep thoughts on how businesses have been run. What are your own thoughts on stock markets, on valuation? Thank you again for speaking to me and good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Ash. All right, have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.